Good evening, and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. In the latest in a series of provocations, President Donald Trump suggests Chicago could be used as a training ground for the military.
He is mischaracterizing Chicago. He clearly doesn't know anything about Chicago. He's unwilling to read anything about Chicago.
Governor J.B. Pritzker also warns the administration is planning to send 100 troops to Chicago to protect immigration agents and facilities.
This is not law enforcement. This is state terrorism.
Advocates work to track ICE arrests amid a chaotic week of agents marching downtown and a military-style raid on a residential building.
We can do things during the shutdown that are irreversible, that are bad for them and irreversible by them.
President Trump tries to use the government shutdown to retaliate against his political enemies. Meanwhile, his administration moves to freeze $2 billion in funding for the Red Line extension. And the Bears are out with flashy renderings of a new Arlington Heights stadium that comes with an ask for more than $800 million in publicly funded infrastructure work. And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Becky Vivi with Chalk Beat Chicago, Elvia Malagon with the Chicago Sun-Times, A.D. Quigg with the Chicago Tribune, and Chip Mitchell with WBEZ. Thank you all for being here. Let's get right to it. Federal agents today have been sweeping across the Northwest Side, reports of tear gas used outside an elementary school, a supermarket, a Home Depot, and of course, we also saw this week that aggressive sweep of an apartment building, arrests at a homeless shelter. You know, Elvia, you've done some reporting on kind of the mental health effects on folks right now. Are these enforcement actions at places that maybe once were considered a safe haven kind of the new norm?
That's exactly what's happening, Nick. So before, the prior policy was that these so-called sensitive locations, ICE would not make arrests at. And sensitive locations are really churches, schools, hospitals. Prior to this administration, ICE didn't go to those locations. And so what's happening now is that arrests are happening, folks are seeing agents in those areas, and that's really leading to a lot of immigrants isolating in their homes and just really going to the absolute necessary, maybe to work and back. But we've been reporting about how there's also this network that's really forming of community members, relatives, sometimes even strangers that are really stepping up to run errands, take kids to school, grab groceries, just so folks are minimizing their exposure.
Well, to your point about, you know, healthcare facilities being a, kind of a, an off, you know, off you know, location that, they won't go, hands off. Earlier today, 26th Ward Alderperson Jesse Fuentes was handcuffed in the Humboldt Park ER when she demanded to know whether agents had a judicial warrant for a man's arrest. Here's a bit of what she had to say afterwards.
They had to take those handcuffs off. Because we have constitutional rights, and in the city of Chicago, every single elected official is going to protect those constitutional rights.
You know, AD, that arrest video, pretty dramatic. And, you know, Fuentes was in a public area of the hospital, not making physical contact of with the agents. What do you make of her detention?
They had to undo it because they really didn't have a good reason to take her. She was not obstructing their actions in any way. She was standing very still, just repeating her words. Do you have a judicial warrant? Do you have a judicial warrant? Nothing beyond that. But the frustration of the agent was really clear, and that kind of jerked her around, and then ultimately had to let her go as soon as they got out of the building.
Yeah, and it seems like it was a pretty dramatic moment there. And the agent keeps saying, you know, that she's in some way impeding them. Of course, she was not trying to block their path, though, in any of the video that we could see.
Right. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see other instances like this as there are more places where confrontations are taking place. We're starting to see politicians showing up at almost all of these locations and kind of trying to stand in the way or at least try to force a conversation about judicial warrants and constitutional rights.
Yeah, trying to use the power of their office. We just saw a bit of that arrest video. You know, we also mentioned immigration agents swarming downtown streets on a quiet day. Chip, you had a pretty illuminating conversation with Border Patrol Commander Gregory Bovino, who's been heading up some of the local efforts. What did you hear from him about how agents decide on their targets?
Well, yeah, the context is that for the first time, we're seeing some of these federal forces. In this case, it was several dozen heavily armed Border Patrol agents wearing military-style fatigues, many of them wearing military-style helmets, long rifles. They're patrolling through some, you know, right past some of the most famous tourist attractions and prominent places in downtown Chicago, and then into a wealthy area, River North, on Sunday. And they're putting on this big show. They picked out a few people. They made several arrests, and it wasn't like they had some kind of plan and were looking for certain people to arrest. They did it what looked like based on appearances. And so I went up and I had a conversation with Gregory Bovino. He was in charge of this patrol. He's from Southern California, very prominent, and he didn't even hide it, you know. And I think that he looked at me. I'm 6'3". I'm middle-aged. I'm white. And he just thought, well, this guy's—he's not going to get me in any trouble. You know, he's not going to call me out on racial profiling. And he just laid it out. We do it based on appearances. He said it.
Yeah, that's the thing about reporters. We have a pesky habit of putting people's words out there when they think we might not. But I mean, it is fairly surprising to hear something like that so openly, and to see the agents in there without really sort of a tactical plan necessarily.
No, it was the one that we saw very close up, Ashley Rezin, who I was working with the photographer. It's a guy who was very short. He had a dark hair, brown skin, you know, dark pencil mustache, goatee, and he ran. And of course, there's our mark. And Bovino and several others chased him down and detained him.
Yeah, go ahead.
And then they said afterwards, oh, this is based on intelligence,
right,
and our experience.
Yeah, we just saw a bit of the video as well of ICE trying to chase down, or agents try to chase down that bicycle messenger unsuccessfully. We've also seen, Becky, some pretty chaotic protests in recent weeks outside of ICE's Broadview facility. Now local officials, state officials, they're stepping in trying to create an area to keep demonstrators safe. Well, how are they handling things there?
Well, it sounds like they are using sort of a space, a perimeter, and engaging with, is it the state? It must be the state police
state
that
police,
are trying
yeah.
to basically yeah. protect that area to allow people to be there and be present there and not kind of get into clashes with the enforcement officers.
Well, you know, Broadview officials have also been pushing back on ICE, you know, the effect on the town, also launching some investigations into how, you know, the feds there are conducting themselves, including reportedly targeting a CBS2 journalist. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this was last weekend, and this person was basically tear gassed in their vehicle. They had their window down, and they were taking notes, and the ICE officials sent tear gas, sprayed them right in the face, and that is clearly, like, that person was not in their way. They were in their car working on filing their story, presumably. And you know, I think that the situation out there has a lot of eyes on it, and it's become a something that officials need to get their heads around.
Yeah. Well, you know, Elvia, you mentioned that a lot of folks are sort of in isolation right now, you know, with fear of getting detained. You spoke with a young woman who's become sort of a lifeline for her parents. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, that's right. I spoke to a woman named Carla. She was born here in the U.S., but her parents, you know, are living in the country without legal status, and she really has little faith that they will be able to adjust their status based on everything that is going on. And so her parents still have to go to work, so they're still going to work, but she's living at home. She's kind of your typical kind of like Gen Z person, figuring things out, working post-college. But in addition to that, she's also really having to take on the weight of protecting her parents. She's tracking their locations on her phone, making sure that they get home safely. Sometimes her mom will hear about ICE rumors in their neighborhood, and she's driving out and she's checking and she's telling her mom, okay, coast is clear. And she mentioned to us that one of the things, they felt like they were okay, but then after ICE agents fatally shot a man in Franklin Park, that happened near where they live. They live in the suburbs, and that's when she really started to get scared. She noticed a change in her parents. They're, you know, not going out for breakfast anymore, no more Dunkin' Donuts runs, things like that, little pieces of life that bring us joy. They're not able to experience that right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, AD, Cook County public defenders are also speaking out about some of their concerns on immigration enforcement. What are the details there?
What they want to happen is no ICE in court or around court at all. It's supposed to be one of those safe havens. A lot of times people are attending to go to immigration proceedings in order to become fully fledged legal citizens, or they're attending as a witness in criminal cases or domestic violence cases. A couple weeks ago, a lot of Cook County officials got together and asked other Cook County officials, if you see ICE acting in any capacity, let us know so we can alert some of the networks that are doing kind of watchdogging and warning people when there are ICE raids nearby. Public Defender Sharon Mitchell kind of escalated that this week and formally asked Chief Judge Tim Evans to limit ICE and court facilities, which is, we're not entirely sure if it's doable. It's still a public space. Evans has not responded, so we don't know where that's headed. And even if it did, even if there was a policy, could it be limited? New York tried something similar. The Trump administration sued. It's still pending in court.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because that is the idea, you know, that you want to make sure folks are attending these, you know, sort of critical hearings. But if they think they're at risk of, you know, being detained, it's likely they may stay home from that.
Yeah, and let's just think a little bit about how this plays out. You have a woman at home who is battered by her husband. She wants help. She wants the abuse to stop, but she doesn't want him deported because he's the breadwinner for her and her kids, and they've actually have a long-term relationship. So is she going to go to court now, or if she can even call the police in the first place, if she's worried that this will end up very quickly in a deportation? You know, and so there are all sorts of situations like this where the presence of immigration authorities in a courthouse or some of these other places, it actually compromises criminal justice at the local level.
Right. Yeah, it could really put a wrench in the works there. Well, Chip, sticking with you for a minute, the governor says he's expecting a wave of troops in Chicago at some point soon. Do you expect Attorney General Kwame Raoul to take court action if that deployment actually comes about?
Well, he very well might. And I think that what we've seen so far from the Trump administration, though, is that they don't really care about waging court battles or the reactions here on the local level. They're, with all these actions, these raids, all of these conflicts that are happening at the Broadview Detention Center, these arrests, these marches downtown, they're actually playing to a national audience, and they're trying to whip up their own base and whip up whatever fear and hatred that they can stir up about immigrants so that they can forward their political and economic agenda. So they're playing to a national audience, and I don't think they really care about any lawsuit on the local level.
And just to add to that, this week we saw a very dramatic raid happen at a South Shore apartment. And of course, the next day we saw something on Twitter posted that makes it seem like it was like a movie.
It's like a trailer for a movie,
right.
Yeah.
But our colleagues who went down there and actually spoke to residents talked about how it was also U.S. citizens who were detained for hours without any answers about mm-hmm. what was going on, why were they being detained in the middle of the night.
Children.
Right,
there were
children,
yes. Children who were held,
yeah.
Who were held without guardians.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the whole scene down there, in some ways it's the point of making the public spectacle, and also I think the other ulterior motive is to encourage people to be afraid and to leave.
Yeah,
true.
Well, and we heard
just...
Horrible. And, you know, we heard just recently, before we went on air, that the state is, in fact, launching an investigation into that raid of the apartment building, so it'll be interesting to see what comes of that. But, I mean, you know, Becky, the memo requesting these troops says the idea is to protect ICE agents and facilities, but given Trump's comments about using Chicago as some sort of a training ground, do you think it'll actually remain within those bounds?
I mean, even the example of the South Shore apartment building, I mean, we're talking about people who, you know, they don't want to leave their home because they're worried about this ICE enforcement outside, but then it's in their very home in the middle of the night. And so I don't really think that there's any bounds here. There's not any boundaries that it seems that are being followed.
That's all. That's about it. Well, AD, we are several days into the latest federal government shutdown, and the Trump administration wants to pull back already promised funding for the Red Line extension. What's their justification?
Essentially that the city, CTA, is using race-based contracting that the federal administration is opposed to. The problem with that is the city receiving this money was actually contingent on them giving a certain amount of contracting business to disadvantaged business enterprises. So businesses run by women, minorities. CTA committed to that months, years ago, correct me?
Oh, yep.
Years ago?
Yes.
This was a federal requirement.
For many years.
And at the moment, it's frozen. I would expect CTA to fight this vigorously. Back in January, everyone kind of thought the coast was clear. Dorval Carter did not leave the CTA until he was sure that the money for this was secured. And it's not unlike what's happened with magnet schools, where similar reasons for pulling back funding.
They're withholding grant money from Chicago Public Schools that was awarded under a previous administration under long-standing policies, procedures, and practices that the Department of Education has had in place for what these grants are for. And this administration is coming in with a whole different interpretation and saying, well, we won't certify that you're in compliance and we'll hold back the money until you come into compliance. And our version of compliance is that you eliminate your programs for black students and you eliminate, and they're also
trapped with state law.
Yes, right. And state law requires them to do some of these things. So the schools are really between a rock and a hard place right now in, you know, how do you comply with these new imposed versions of requirements that this new DOE is putting down? And I do think, again, this is going to get wound through the courts. Mm-hmm. The courts will rule. And
yeah, we heard, you know, Stacey CPS Davis
has
Gates
said, yes, she should sue. Yeah. And I think while the amount of money for the schools that's being withheld is about $8 million, which is not a lot in a $10 billion budget, it's still significant.
It's on top of other
and
cuts.
And it's precedent-setting in a way that if the district doesn't take action to fight this, then do they go after other streams of money under the same arguments that they're now applying to the CTA?
Yeah, and
it's not like CPS isn't in budget trouble, as it is.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah. Right. It's not like they can afford to just...
Or the CTA, for that matter. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, too, because, you know, with the CTA, there was funding guarantees for the red-purple modernization on the north side.
Well underway.
Right,
Everyone remembers earlier this summer when those renovated stations opened.
Reopened.
It was like, we're well on our way to completing this project.
Yeah, and that was money that was, you know, approved in the waning days of the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. The first Trump administration distributed the funding as they were supposed to, but clearly we're seeing a change in tactics now. Mm-hmm. Well, Adi, it's everyone's favorite time of the year, and that is city budget season. give us a preview. What's ahead for the mayor and for the city council?
Very rocky terrain. There's political pressure because we are getting really close to municipal elections. There is labor pressure from unions that work in the city that are very afraid of layoffs, furloughs, or any other kinds of cuts to departments. There's aldermen that very rarely agree on much of anything. There's a mayor who has vowed not to raise property taxes, even though it's one of the easiest and biggest levers he can pull to fill a nearly $2 billion deficit. We have a city council that just agreed to more costs at its most recent meeting. Including a global settlement that'll cost $90 million next year. It's just like, I thought last year was intense. This year is going to be really something.
Really extra double secret intense.
Yeah, really double extra secret intense. And we have no idea yet what exactly the mayor is going to announce in his budget speech later this month.
Well, one place where local officials are in alignment, Elvia, the Chicago Department of Public Health, joining with the state of Illinois and breaking sort of federal COVID guidelines. Was this something you more or less expected to see?
Yeah, everyone, all the medical experts and doctors that I spoke to, everyone was expecting that the state would say something that was very contrary to what's going on the federal level. They expected that there would be access, more wide access to COVID shots, and that also, I mean, there's some other things that on the federal level, especially for children, they're kind of changing their recommendations. So here we started to see maybe about 2 weeks ago that they said that pretty much anyone could get a COVID vaccine and hopefully you're able to. I've been hearing kind of some mixed stories about how that is actually playing out at pharmacies. But here in Illinois, pretty much if you want one, you should be able to. Even parents, even though they're only recommending them for certain children, if a parent does want their child to be vaccinated, there should be a way for them to do that.
Okay. Well, turning to some news about CPD, CHIP, police reform advocates say the department's violating the consent decree because use of force has been on the rise, when it comes to black and Latino Chicagoans. They made that charge in a federal court filing, and they kind of said Superintendent Snelling hasn't been coming to the table. Do you think this kind of public pressure could persuade CPD to talk through solutions, or might this, coming out in public, make them dig in their heels a bit?
Well, Larry Snelling is very unique in, among recent superintendents for many, many years. He has broad community support, but and he's also he was the favorite candidate to become superintendent among rank and file cops, as expressed by their union. So I think he is sensitive to public opinion, and he doesn't want to look like he's letting corrupt and brutal cops off the hook. So you know, we'll see.
And especially at a time where the department is still very much not in full compliance with the consent decree.
Right.
You know, this is something that they want to make a public commitment to working toward.
That's exactly right. A small fraction of the consent decree paragraphs have been complied with totally, which means the policies are being in operation already.
Quite a ways to go. Well, turning back to some education news, Becky, there was a new report on spending per student in Illinois, and that it's improved pretty significantly. What are the findings there? What helped that turnaround?
So a few years, I should take us back in time a little bit.
Let's do it.
More than a few years ago, I guess back in 2015, 16, the state legislature was having a big discussion about how Illinois ranked very low in the amount that the state puts towards K-12 education and K-12 school districts. Back in 2008, so this report goes back to 2008 and said we were 47th out of 50 states. In 2017, lawmakers passed a new formula for distributing state money to schools, and with that passage of that bill, they also committed to adding $350 million annually every year until every district gets to funding adequacy. And folks who are regular viewers know we've talked about this a bit and what that means, and we're kind of all these districts are on a ramp. So the state has really been increasing. Since 2017, they've put in $2.8 billion additional to that formula, and that has resulted this week, Advance Illinois, an advocacy group that watches a lot of education policy in Illinois, said that we now rank 18th. So we went from 47th to 18th in 15 years, which is pretty significant. Now, there's still equity gaps because we have a system that still is very heavily reliant on property taxes. So local communities, you know, have their schools funded by their local taxes. But the state's contribution to K-12 schools has increased in a significant way that has made an impact.
Well, and we've heard a lot from CTU in the recent, mm-hmm. you know, CPS budget battle, saying the state's still not funding us adequately. We're not getting what we need. Do you think this report could scramble any of that?
It might scramble some of that, you know, I do think you've heard from Pritzker and lawmakers, you know, we're on this, we've got this plan under this formula that we committed to, you know, 10 years ago. We're going to keep marching toward that. To move from where we're at now to immediately full funding for everybody, just being able to do that in 1 year would be too big. I mean, it would be like billions of dollars.
Yeah, yeah.
And the state budget every year deals with deficits. And so this sort of slow march, while isn't, you know, ideal for people in schools who would like all that money tomorrow,
yeah.
It's a kind of a budgetary challenge. So I don't know that it'll scramble it. I do think the state will stay on that track. And I do think there were some important other points raised about, again, the equity. And even as we've increased funding formula money, there's been cuts or proration done in areas like special ed or transportation, which can then, you know, cause ground level disruptions for school districts.
AD, we've got about 30 seconds left. There's officials celebrating a new quantum computing campus on the old Southwark site. Neighbors want a community benefits agreement. You've reported heavily on the Obama Center. You know, just how tough those agreements are to land, fair to say?
Very fair to say. And it's even difficult for the city, county, or state to guarantee certain housing protections or job protections in that area. I'm sure community members will still go at it, as they have for the Obama Center. They just got a deal for South Shore a couple weeks ago, so it's something I'll be watching closely.
All right. Well, we've been watching all of you closely, and you've all been great, but we are out of time. So our thanks to Becky Vivi, Elvia Malagon, A.D. Quigg, and Chip Mitchell. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Tonight's presentation of Week in Review is made possible in part by Ann and Rich Carr, BNSF Railway, and Francine and Dr. Anthony Brown. Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, additional support is provided by
And that's our show for this Friday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter. That's the Daily Chicagoan at WTTW.com/newsletter. And join us Monday evening on Chicago Tonight for a one-on-one with Mayor Brandon Johnson to talk about plans to address the city's budget shortfall, immigration enforcement, and much more. Lots to talk with him about. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. All right, folks, the Bears are out with their latest plan for this stadium and mixed-use development. If only they were as persistent on the field as they are off it. This is in Arlington Heights, some $850 million in publicly funded infrastructure. Do you think that might have a snowball's chance, given that it won't just benefit the team?
No.
Go off, Chip.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
I mean, I have one thought, which is if they're trying to build public support, they have to do a lot better with these stadium renderings. What I saw there was a total 60s and 70s style kind of ashtray brutalist design that reminded me of the Houston Astrodome from 1965. So that's one thing.
With the Astrodome no longer with us.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, there have been all sorts of economic studies that public financing of stadiums for sports teams.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm that gives back to the community through law and philanthropy.